All right, back with another episode of the TJ and Todd's Tailgate for the Place to Be Nation. We have Todd back in on the phone here, as he has been the last 4 weeks. Todd, I'm glad you can make it here with us today. We'll start out with this one. What in the bleep happened over the weekend? Indiana, they come into Missouri. They just fresh off a loss to Bowling Green, and they somehow beat down the – well, it's not really a beat down, but they escape from the SEC East favorite's house with a win. So if you were there, what in the bleep happened?
Well, if you actually watched it, it was kind of a beat down because they were manhandling both sides of the ball all afternoon. I'm hoping as a Missouri fan that it was Missouri just not coming to play and looking forward to this week's matchup with South Carolina, because there were some serious issues, emphasized on both sides of the lines, both offensive and defensive lines were thrown around. Of course, Missouri didn't have Marcus Golden, their biggest and most important playmaker on defense. He's going to be back this week for South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd like to think that you've got enough depth, especially with a guy like Shane Ray in there, who's an all-SEC candidate, a defensive end, you'd think that'd be enough to stop Indiana. But this is the second time now where defensive coordinator Dave Steckel has looked really, really weak to a big-time running back. As good as Missouri was last year, they were kind of embarrassed and exposed in the SEC championship game, especially in the second half against Auburn. Last year against South Carolina, in a double overtime loss, that would have clinched the division for Missouri. They were kind of exposed with the screen pass against Steve Spurrier. And then we saw last week, you know, a big-time running back. You got to give Coleman his due. I mean, he's kind of quietly putting together an awesome season. And I think in the same conference as Abdullah and some of the other guys in the Big Ten, he's probably not going to get, you know, the recognition he deserves anywhere else. I mean, he's a great running back. They couldn't stop the swing pass, couldn't stop the screen. And they just ran right at him. So it's not going to get any easier this week against Mike Davis in South Carolina.
No. Well, speaking of that, you know, that South Carolina game, it's Carolina, your Missouri, Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, Kentucky, all knotted up with one loss. Is this the week where we see some teams kind of separate from each other? Like I said, because you have your, you know, Carolina and Missouri game, but, you know, also in the SEC East, I'm trying to get their schedule up here right now. I mean, it looks like there's going to be a couple other conference games in there. So come the end of this week, are we going to get a better picture of which teams are going to run away with this division as a favorite? Because also, Tennessee's at Georgia. I just pulled up. Tennessee's at Georgia. And, if Vanderbilt, you know, Kentucky can hold off on Vanderbilt.
The good thing, if you're a Missouri fan, is that was an embarrassing game, but it was outside of the conference.
Right.
So you still got a shot to, take this game. It's not going to be easy. Columbia, South Carolina, game day is going to be there. The team's going to be ready. South Carolina, kind of like Missouri, has a lot to play for because they didn't look very good against Vanderbilt last weekend. But, you know, hey, if you're Missouri and you take this game, you've got a leg up on everyone else in the division. If you're South Carolina and you take this game, you've kind of rectified that damage, you know, on that Thursday night opening game against A&M. This week in the SEC, I think we're going to see a little bit of the distancing from the pack. I believe Florida's off after their unfortunate Saturday in Alabama. But if we can go out of the East, I'm kind of excited about this Arkansas-Texas A&M game.
That's true.
I think Arkansas is going to win, but I think in the West, we might see, after what happened last weekend with LSU and Mississippi State, maybe see Texas A&M kind of take that jump as the team underneath Bama.
Hmm.
Auburn is playing out of conference, but they didn't look too great last week against Kansas State.
That's right.
So I don't think that they're cemented in that second spot. Tennessee and Georgia, I'd like to, you know, if you're Tennessee, they're such a young team and they've got so many true freshmen playing that's just going to be a really rough environment for them. They already got tested one time in Norman. And they're going to kind of take the bumps again, I think, in this game. I'm looking at, I think UGA's favored by 17. I think that actually might be a little high if Tennessee plays their best game. But, you know, I really want to look at that Missouri-South Carolina game because those are two teams that are kind of looking into this game and have a lot to play for. South Carolina is much better than they were against Vanderbilt. Missouri is much better than they were against Indiana.
Right.
So it's kind of who's going to show up. And then this A&M and Arkansas game. Arkansas is not going to run away with the SEC West title, but they're much improved over last year, and they've got one of the best rushing attacks in the entire country. And A&M has never been known for their defense.
You know, and I was just going to ask you about that because Arkansas, I think 2 weeks ago it was, they went into Lubbock and beat down the Big 12's Texas Tech. You know, they weren't a favorite in the Big 12, but it seems like every year Tech is one of those teams that plays a dark horse and finishes with at least 7 to 8 wins. So what's stopping Bielma's squad from going back into Texas and this time to College Station and pulling out a huge upset this weekend?
Nothing. I mean,
yeah.
I think A&M is a very good team. Obviously, they've played great this year. They've got the great new quarterback. But I think at this point in the season, kind of like what we saw with South Carolina, where South Carolina was appointed, the SEC East champ and possibly a team that could make a run at a national title, you don't really know much of anything right now in September. I mean, you know Texas A&M is a good team, but I don't think they're going to go undefeated. And the biggest weakness this year, just like last year, was on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think they have a very good defensive line. I don't think they have a very good secondary. And I think when you're playing a team like Arkansas that can run, and run for days with guys like Jonathan Williams and Corliss Marshall, I mean, those are future NFL players right there. And the important thing about playing heavy on the run is Arkansas can eat up the clock, something that Texas A&M might not be able to do. So it's kind of the, one strength plays off another's weakness because Texas A&M scores and they score fast. They've got, once again, one of the best quarterback to wide receiver tandems in the nation with Seals and Kenny Hill.
Right.
And I think really this game is going to be a lot closer than people are giving Arkansas credit for. And I know a lot of us panned the Brett Bielema hire, because a lot of people thought the AD was kind of calling the shots in Wisconsin. But I think bringing in the former offensive coordinator from Tennessee to run this program is going to work out really well. And, I mean, Jonathan Williams, if you haven't watched Arkansas play, and if you're outside of the SEC, you probably haven't. But this guy is a stud. And they've really got three guys in the backfield. And Alex Collins is another guy I hadn't brought up yet, but man, they can run for days.
Now, let's take a step out of here, out of the SEC, and we'll move over to the ACC. Before some audio got dropped last week, we talked about Jameis Winston and being suspended for a half of a game. Then it turned out Friday night he was suspended for the entire Clemson game. Florida State still escapes with a win. Was that going to be their only true test until, potentially the college football playoff?
Well, when we had talked about that game last week, I think we didn't, we kind of dismissed the importance of the Jameis Winston suspension, because I don't know if at that point it might have only been a half.
It was only a half, yeah.
When we recorded last week. And still, even with a half, I thought, there's no way they lose this game. And then even when he was out for the entire game, I thought, Florida State still got this, but that was a nail biter. And if you're a Florida State fan, I think that's the kind of game that you're probably pretty nervous sitting at home or in the stadium, but you're kind of happy you had now, because it showed a lot of those players that they're vulnerable and they're mortal men. You know, even in the weak ACC, you can't just look at the end of the tunnel. You got to get that national title game first before you can win a national title. Clemson, they got blown out in that Georgia game. This is kind of a good, they came just short, and I know if you're a Clemson fan or a player or their coaches, it doesn't really mean much because you still lost. But even without Jameis Winston, Florida State's a pretty damn good team.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting, and I knew this was going to happen, is how much the cameras focused in on Jameis Winston in street clothes.
Interesting.
It's like, come on, the guy didn't even play, and then, of course, when they won the game, the Florida State is all jumping up and down in the end zone, and you know, who's in the middle? You know, not a Jameis Winston. But can't you give the other guy a little credit? You know, he's never going to have this opportunity, you know, probably again or for a long time.
You know, I take the opposite on that one. I think that shows it was him trying to play the team player role. You know, he could have just been in the sidelines sulking the entire time when they're losing or if a bad set happened, but showing him run down to the middle and, you know, even the backup, giving him credit for helping him out the entire week, you know, when he knew that he was going to be suspended for the half, I think it kind of shows to Jameis that he may make some dumb choices as a 20-year-old, but he still cares about his team. But whose fault do you think it was that he actually put on pads for the warm-up and actually took the warm-up? Was that Jameis' fault, Jimbo's fault, or an equipment manager that just forgot the whole situation?
Well, I guess it's got to be Jimbo Fisher's fault because he went out on the field in pads, I believe, from warm-ups or whatever. And
yeah.
I don't know how you get out from, like, the locker room to the field without the head coach knowing what's going on. But I'm sure he's really busy.
Yeah.
I really think it's a non-issue. I don't think it was a big deal at all. I just think that Jameis Winston is such an important figure. He's a Heisman favorite. He's the national champion, returning national champion mm-hmm. quarterback. He's the quarterback of the number one team in the nation again this year. I don't know how he just waltzes out there past, you know, forget the equipment, you know, the trainer.
Right.
That's like the lowest personal totem pole. There's a lot of well-paid men that saw him walk by in pads that probably should have known better. But I think it's a total non-issue. I don't think it meant anything at all.
Now, what do you think would be a bigger story, though? During the game, or even when you said, you know, he made it himself the center of attention following the overtime win, if he had done nothing and not ran down, or is the story kind of bigger that, like you said, he was acting like the center of attention?
Well, I think it's half and half. I mean, he wasn't, like, jumping up and down, waving at the cameras. It's also the fault of, I believe this game was on ESPN. I mean, it's also ESPN's fault for,
yeah.
you know, just focusing in on him on every play. But with Jameis Winston, I think he's got to be really careful with how he handles himself moving forward. I think that you can still support your teammates and support your team without overshadowing them. I don't think that he was really, you know, this isn't on the laundry list of things Jameis Winston has gotten in trouble for the last year. This is like, you know, on the very, very bottom.
Right.
But I just think that for a lot of people that view him as a kind of self-centered, irresponsible guy, to just run in the middle of the pack and jump up and down, you know, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, to be honest. I just think that, you know, you can be a little more subdued and let, some of the guys that normally don't get their chance in the spotlight to have a little fun.
Well, I mean, now the only time Jameis gets out of the back of the lineup, I'm assuming, is if injury or if he does something stupid, which, in your opinion, this last thing we'll speak on for a state, does he do something stupid again to kind of get himself kicked out, or do you think this is a lesson learned and now he'll clean up his act?
I think at this point he might do something stupid again.
Oh my God.
Hopefully it's not something this stupid where he just does it in front of thousands of students.
Yeah.
But I think even if something stupid does happen with Jameis Winston or we hear something new about this sexual assault case, we're not going to hear it until the NFL draft. I think Florida State's got their best men handling this guy right now.
Gotcha. Not too much else to think about from over the weekend. Oklahoma took care of their business. Alabama, they held it tight against Florida before finally pulling away. I'm trying to think, you know, we saw some of the upsets with LSU getting upset, your Missouri Tigers getting upset, my Pitt Panthers being upset after I sent a text message to my buddies back home in Pittsburgh saying, wow, up 17-3 against Iowa. Looks like this team's pretty good, only to give up the next 17 points and lose 20-17. So that was awesome as well. But anything else we're missing out on from the weekend that caught your eye?
Well, I think Mississippi State, I mean, that game, if you watch that game, it was a lot. It was a beatdown. Mississippi mm-hmm. State dominated LSU in one of the most intimidating and most, frightening venues in all of college football. You know, Death Valley is Death Valley for a reason.
Right.
For a program like Mississippi State to go in there and really just put their foot in the throat of LSU in their own backyard, that's like a program-defining win for a school like Mississippi State. And Dan Mullen, their coach, who's spent the last kind of 6 years doing everything he can to get them to jump Ole Miss as the kind of darling team in SEC West. Dak Prescott came into this year with a lot of hype around him, and you know, a lot of people weren't really sold on that team as a whole. But if you watch that game, I mean, Prescott, and this was last year, I watched him against A&M and Johnny Manziel, and I knew right then, just watching him play, you know, forget the numbers, just when you watch him play, you got to watch this guy play because he's special. I mean, he's big, he's strong, he's a gifted runner for his size. If he gets better in the passing game, I think Mississippi State could be any team in the nation by the end of the year. But, you know, outside of that, that Auburn-Kansas State game was one that we had our eyes on. And that was one of those games that, you know, if you're a Kansas State fan, kind of like I was last weekend, you know, we had set up a tailgate, partied all day. My mom came into town for the game. And you know, after we lost, I went right back to the hotel and passed out. if you're Kansas State and you spent all day getting ready for this game, the only game people were watching that night, and you left that many points on the board.
Right.
They had that game. They were right there in the fourth quarter. We had talked last week. We knew Kansas State was going to be right there through the end of it. I mean, Auburn gets out of there by the skin of their teeth. That was a very kind of weird game for a Bill Snyder team.
It seemed like the only reason why I lost is, you know, what we said last week, college kickers. You know, if you have what shouldn't people start recruiting now, kids out of high school that have actually proven themselves to be a viable kicker to their team, instead of just finding some walk-on and trying out five people and saying, okay, you be our kicker?
Well, schools recruit, you know, they recruit kickers because they find people around their state or the region that are kind of standing out as a kicker or a soccer player or, you know, what have you. But I think the question is always, do you offer the four-year scholarship to a kicker?
Interesting. Because then, you know,
it's not so much sending out the coaches to find somebody that can kick, because it's important. Because what's funny is in the NFL, kicks are like automatic. So anything under 40 yards, you don't even really watch. You just go, okay, they got 3 points here, or, you know, the extra point, they got the extra point here. But in college, really anything over 35, you don't have it. And our kicker at Mizzou, I mean, he's horrible inside of 30. So you never know. You can't take it for granted in college. It's like the ultimate wild card. So
right.
You got to recruit that position. You got to get somebody that knows what they're doing. But I think the question is, do you waste the scholarship, well, not waste, but do you commit a scholarship to a kicker as opposed to a tight end or an offensive lineman or a wide receiver?
Well, why not move the hash marks then? It seems like having the wider hash marks kind of screws up the kickers because they get those impossible angles from 20 yards out.
That's what it looks like. I'm not a kicker, so I can't tell you the intricacies of why college kickers struggle. But it does look like it's always an issue is where they line up, where they take the kick. You know, when you watch it like the NFL, and you just look at college kickers, they usually line up in what looks like the wrong spot because they seem to hit the crossbar a lot, or like the Georgia game, you know, against South Carolina a couple weeks ago. I mean, he had pretty much everything right. If he was just an inch or two, you know, to the outside, maybe he hits right in there on the crossbar. You know, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's a big enough problem yet to propose like a rule change. I just think that if you've got a good kicker, you know, hold on to him. And if you're a fan of a team that has a good kicker, really appreciate that guy, because when you're in some of these big-time conferences, you know, the Big Ten or the SEC or Pac-12, they could be the difference between, you know, a playoff spot or a six-win season.
Right. Or it could be like Florida State, who ES Game Day did a big preview on him for going basically perfect, I think, since he's been at the school.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, they're like the hardest. They're really one of the, you know, most pressure-filled positions on the field.
Yeah.
They just sit there. They don't. You know, they're not. I would just assume they're probably not part of that, you know, that group mentality of like the offense or the defense. They're kind of, you know, on their own. And you know, if they make a kick, it's what they're supposed to do. And if they miss a kick, well, we know what happened.
Right. I mean, it's like Alabama last year. If it's not for that kid coming up, maybe I think it was 2 yards short from the goalpost, we don't have that miracle return from Auburn. But
nope.
But coming up for this week here, you know, we touched on South Carolina. You guys, Missouri going there, potential upset. Tennessee, Georgia being a potential upset. You know, UCLA travels to Arizona State. We're recording this on Thursday, so by the time everybody gets a chance to listen to it on placetobenation.com, you know, we're going to have either UCLA being upset with another good test on the road at Arizona State. But the only other thing I can see from this schedule coming up this week is Oregon State at USC. You know, what do you think of USC losing their second straight game after having a week off from that BC debacle?
Well, it's definitely not the direction you want the program to be moving in. But
yeah,
we had, you know, I've kind of been a little cautious on giving the keys to the Pac-12 title game to USC right away after that Stanford game. Because they're really, to me this year, they're not a playoff team, or not a playoff team. And I think the biggest reason is because I've not seen anything out of their quarterback that's really wowed me. And I think in that quarterback-heavy league, you need a signal caller that's going to take you, you know, that extra step. You need a quarterback that's going to, win the game for you, take that ball in his own hand.
Right.
And they're going to see that guy against Oregon State. So, well, I think it's going to be an interesting game. People were really high on USC after that Stanford game, but the Pac-12 was really becoming like the SEC, where it's like a meat grinder.
Right.
You could tell a conference is really becoming good when the non-title contenders are good teams. So Oregon State is a good team. Arizona is a good team. When those teams, Washington is a very good team, you know, most years. Washington State, we saw last week, pushed Oregon to the brink. So when those teams that aren't looking for a playoff spot, or they're not looking for a 10-win season, but they can still beat you on any given Saturday,
right,
that senior conference was good. And I think USC is going to be in for a fight this weekend.
Well, let me ask you this. UCLA, Arizona State, we've been talking about UCLA as the favorite to come out of that Pac-12 South as the conference or the division champion to play basically the winner of Oregon Stanford in the Pac-12 title game. Arizona State holds serve at home this week, beats UCLA. Do they become the favorite to win that division?
Well, if Oregon State, or if Arizona State wins on Thursday, they would be doing it without their star quarterback.
Oh, interesting.
He's actually hurt for this game, and they're going to their quarterback Kelly is one of the best in the Pac-12, kind of one of the most underrated quarterbacks. And he doesn't have quite the marquee of a guy like Hundley or Mariota, but he's still a Taylor Kelly's still a very good quarterback. But I believe he's out for this game. That definitely be a statement if they can get past UCLA, who have not looked good at all this year. So
no,
it's not,
no,
not impossible. Yeah, that puts them in the driver's seat. And with USC, we don't know what's going to happen with USC this weekend or moving forward. In that Pac-12 South, I think that this is the most important game of their season right here. And I think even before USC kind of looked shaky against Boston College, this was still the most important game for Arizona State. So I really think Arizona State's got a chance in this one. And if they do it without, you know, the guy that really makes our offense click, that'd be a very, very good win for the Sun Devils.
You don't say. And probably play at home and, you know, at Sun Devil Stadium or whatever their new team name is. We can't say Devil or whatever PC cultural world we live in. It sure as hell helps. Sure as heck beats going to the Rose Bowl and trying to take down UCLA there. But, you know, personally, I hope Arizona State loses. Todd Graham, I loved whenever he went to Pitt and said this is his dream job. Only 2 years later to leave Pitt for Arizona State and say that was his dream job. So that's just my personal feelings for Arizona State. Aside from Missouri, this Arizona State game tonight on Thursday, what else are we missing for this week that's catching your eye?
Yeah, kind of one of these lackluster weeks.
I know.
College football is really up and down, you know, when you get into this part of the season, because teams that either just started playing the conference schedule or they stopped or they not yet played their conference schedule, they're playing the first game of their conference schedule. And a lot of these conferences, like the SEC, they work in like Louisiana Lafayette and Furman and these kind of schools like in the middle of their conference play. So you might think, okay, you know, we've had a great SEC game with A&M or South Carolina, Georgia, really getting our Mississippi State and LSU really getting the pick of things, and then you see LSU play New Mexico State this week. So you're kind of like, well, you know. But another good game, Cincinnati and Ohio State. That might be Ohio State's at home. They're favored by 17. But as we saw against Virginia Tech, you know, being in the horseshoe doesn't mean everything for Ohio State. They're not world beaters this year. So Cincinnati is a team that's really want to put on in a big way for their conference and kind of get back into that sexy pick for a playoff team or big bowl type team that they've been in a couple of years past. So I think that might be a pretty good game.
I'm glad you brought that up. Last Saturday, we saw the emergence of Gunnar Kiel after he picked, I think, 11 schools before finally settling on Cincinnati, who I think might have been one of those 11 schools he originally picked to go play at. But he came in. He looked very good. He was a top prospect. So seeing him on a huge stage at Ohio State, that's going to be something I'm looking forward to. So I'm really glad you brought that up. And for anybody listening, if you can name off all the Gunnar Kiel schools, that's very impressive, because I can think of Indiana and then Notre Dame, and then they all kind of get lost in the haze. If you remember, Todd,
Missouri, yes.
Are you serious? He was even committed in Missouri, too?
Yes, Missouri. And then he kind of bounced around.
LSU, I think, was one.
With a name like Gunnar Kiel, you know, you're like, you have to be a good quarterback. That's like a total, like, when I heard that name kind of floating around a couple of years ago, I was like, that's a total, like, quarterback name, Gunnar Kiel.
I know, right?
I don't know, his handlers or whoever is making his career decisions have not been too bright. It kind of reminds me, on a small level, here in Missouri, Blaine Gabbert's brother, Tyler Gabbert, was a backup, and he wasn't going to get playing time over James Franklin a couple of years ago, and his parents yanked him, sent him to UCF, where he kind of dropped out of UCF and went off the map. So for Gunnar Kiel, I'm happy he's making something of himself, because he was a very, very highly touted pro-style quarterback out of high school. But I will say this, we've left that USC game, but the name slipped my mind. But if anybody is on that side of the country listening to this game or to this podcast, you got to watch Sean Mannion of Oregon State.
Yes.
He is one of the not just best quarterbacks in the Pac-12, but if you want to talk about a pro-style passing quarterback, I think he's the best in the country. And USC is going to have their hands full with this guy. So if you get a chance, you know, watch Missouri-South Carolina. Hopefully it's not a blowout. And then if you're on that side of the country, you know, it's the West Coast time difference, so you're probably going to get it a little later than some of the other games worth watching this week. But you got to watch this guy at least once. I mean, he's a stud.
I like it. We'll end on that one. And plus, Sean Mannion, he is, I believe he's a senior this year, so he's been around. He's got the experience, so we'll go from there. All right, Place to Be Nation, we're going to end the show on that one. For Todd, for myself, thank you for listening. We will check you guys out next time. Thank you for downloading this week's episode of Season Todd Tailgate. For more information on the show, go to placetobenation.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at PJ Masculine, Hot Todd Gessling, or at Place to Be Nation.